Good Friday morning and welcome to the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin. Our guest in the first half hour, D.C. Councilman Michael Brown. In our second half hour, it's an open forum. We'll discuss national and local issues with a focus on the presidential campaign, including last night's debate. Your phone calls will be welcome at 877-336-1035. We'll discuss presidential politics with Mark and other issues as well in our second half hour, 877-336-1035. You can send in questions at WTOP's Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag PoliticsProgram. Now, WTOP's Mark Plotkin.
We're glad to have at large, meaning he represents the entire city, independent, and we'll talk about that later. You're up for re-election, too, aren't you?
I certainly am, in November.
November, not on the April 3rd primary. I have plenty to talk about statehood and your campaign that way, but let's talk about something that has sort of been recessed but is going to come back. You're the major proponent of internet gambling.
Gaming, excuse me.
Yes. Oh, maybe that was a subconscious thing. All right, well, what's the difference?
Well, gaming is giving folks an opportunity. It's more like it's a hobby. As you know, we have some very low thresholds related on how much you can play per week, only $250. And so it's really not for the professional gamer, so to speak, or gambler. That's why it's internet gaming.
And the legislation has been reformed, revised. It goes to Jack Evans' Finance Committee.
Committee I sit on as well.
All right. Give us the innards of really how this would work and what are the chances that it will even come out of committee. There's a lot of controversy about this.
Well, first of all, it's already the law. So coming out of committee, I think, is a different kind of term of art. It's already the law of the District of Columbia. The question is how to implement it and to make sure it's implemented properly. What we wanted to do was to make sure we had as much public input as possible. Unprecedented, Mark. We went to every ward in the city and had community meetings related to iGaming, what it means, how it's going to be implemented, the technology. And frankly, there wasn't a big, large outcry opposed to it because it's a choice thing. You can play or you don't have to play if you don't want to. But more importantly, Mark, not only were we not receiving revenue, there are people that are playing, thousands of district residents are playing every day on these offshore illegal sites with no regulations, no protections. And now they'll be protected, and the city can make some money from
it. You talk about revenue. How much revenue?
I don't think we'll know.
Give me a ballpark figure. We have a ballpark
of about $13 to $14 million over the next 4 years. But we think the number is going to be much higher than that. And after we do that, we'll see if we can really surge. But as you know, Mark, as anything, you have to be first to the marketplace. And we were trying to be first to the marketplace. And now, because our legislation has been confirmed by the Department of Justice, now 20-some-odd other states are copying our legislation and putting it into effect.
Much of the controversy had to do about where the actual internet gaming would take place. Where will it not take place?
Well, one thing, the folks that have been lobbying against it, and it's been a vocal few, but a few nonetheless, have put out a lot of false things, like you can do it in libraries and schools, government buildings, all not true. You can block the URL. Codes and addresses to make sure that you're not able to play in libraries, schools, government buildings.
Religious institutions,
not true, total false, total myth, and I'm sorry that folks were making things up.
And so
like
you're
that.
Confident it will be implemented the way you want with, does the chair of the committee, Jack Evans, have your support, have the support of this bill in the way in which you want it?
Well, keep in mind, it's not a bill. It's the law now.
All right. So in terms of the implementation.
Hearing, yes. Well, I hope so. That's what the Buddy Rugow, who is the head of the lottery
Buddy
board.
Buddy Rugow, I'm glad you mentioned him, who does not live in the District of Columbia, and we can't get his income tax and should live in the District of Columbia. We're going
to
take—
My understanding is he's trying to change that now.
More of the Politics Program with our guest, D.C. Councilman Michael Brown, coming up on WTOP, along with your phone calls at 877-336-1035. You're on the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin. Our guest, D.C. Councilman Michael Brown. In our second half hour, it's an open forum. Get your questions ready. You get to talk to Mark Plotkin about presidential politics, D.C., Virginia, or Maryland politics. The number is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035.
Let the record show that the guest was laughing when you provided that promo.
Because I said how versatile you are.
You said it facetiously, but I know you mean it sincerely.
I absolutely do.
Sincerely facetious. Let me talk about something I have more of a grasp of, and that is you have been, and I give you your props on this, but I'm going to go after you because you have been such a proponent, and I think there's a lack of effectiveness. Nobody has championed the word statehood more than you have, Michael Brown, and I applaud you for that. Others use euphemisms or don't even think the word is a dirty word and don't use it. You have used it when you've run for office, for mayor, for Ward 4, where you did not win, but when you did win at large. So you have been a consistent, not a consistent conservative, a consistent statehood supporter. But I quarrel with this plan to go to the state legislatures. Michael Brown always looks great in sartorial splendor going out to the state legislatures. For instance, you're going to New Hampshire, well and good, but New Hampshire is controlled in both houses by Republicans. Wouldn't the energies be much better? I know you didn't think we were going to get to a question. Channeling to the actual people that vote on this issue, which is the 435 members of the House and the 100 members of the Senate, and channel your energies right here?
The answer is yes. I think we can run parallel tracks on all those different strategies. I think no matter what path statehood takes for us to get there, whether I know folks, some folks think constitutional amendment is the best way, other folks think a regular bill from the Hill.
Well, you don't think constitutional amendment is the right way.
No, I'm not suggesting that.
Which is 2/3 of both houses and 38 state legislatures. When they passed the Voting Rights Amendment, which provided full representation in both the House and the Senate, it passed 2/3. People don't even remember or maybe even envision. 2/3 in both the House and the Senate went out to the states, and it was 16 states ratified. You need 38.
Correct.
And I want to mention that Eric Holder is the only person in this Obama administration who has been a friend to the district on this issue. The president, let me ask you without leading the witness, I can't contain myself. This president, who carried 93%, of the vote in the general election, who carried every precinct in the D.C. primary and in the general election, has not even put on the license plate, won't go to the Wilson Building, and won't utter one word about this. And believe me, in November, they'll vote overwhelmingly for him again. Doesn't this president have to be embarrassed or given a lesson that you just can't take the support of the District of Columbia for granted?
Well, first of all, back on the other piece, Mark, too, I think we can run it on parallel tracks. We have to get this message outside of just D.C. and the Beltway. Other folks around the country have to know about our plight related to statehood. Yes, with Obama, I'm extremely disappointed in the president's lack of intensity on this particular issue. I will support him. I'm going to be a surrogate speaker for the campaign again, and I look forward to defending him against whichever Republican it is. Looks like it'll be Mitt Romney. Maybe it'll be Newt Gingrich. He seems to be surging. But the point is, yes, he should at least put the tags on his car. I think that would send a signal. I don't know why it's not part of his stump speech. I don't think he would lose one single vote in any swing state anywhere in America if he said he supported D.C. statehood. Yes, I wish he would do it. I'm disappointed he hasn't.
Any way in which, since you said you're going to be a surrogate speaker, you have a little influence to make him incorporate? What about just walking over to the Wilson Building, which he's been invited to, and he responded with an email, or his office responded with an email? Hasn't he just treated us like dirt?
Well, one of the things, I'm fortunate enough, I been to the Christmas party the last few times.
Did you ask him about this?
He knows exactly what's going to come out of my mouth. Every time I stand next to him at the Christmas tree for the picture, I say, statehood, Mr. President. I said it again this year.
And what did he say?
And he smiles and says, we're working on it. And I said, Mr. President, you know, at least you can put your tags on the car. And he smiles and he's very gracious.
I want to repeat this, which I've repeated ad nauseum, but it is such an appalling remark. It has to get the widest distribution. When Mayor Vince Gray, before he was mayor-elect, went to lunch with the president, the mayor-elect asked him, why don't you just put the license plate on, to which the taxation without representation license plate, to which he said the following: the Secret Service won't let me. Do you believe that?
I don't want to say that the Secret Service hasn't given an opinion on it, but it seems to me he's the commander-in-chief and the president of the United States. It seems he can tell them what he wants on his car.
All right. We're going to go to some issues that have to do with some of your colleagues, and we'll come back after that and hopefully get your frank and candid remarks.
You always get that from me, Mark.
We'll also get in some phone calls. If you have a question for Councilman Brown, now's the time to call 877-336-1035. This is the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin and our guest, D.C. Councilman Michael Brown, taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can send it a question via Twitter. Use the hashtag Politics Program. Once again, WTOP's Mark Plotkin.
A final thought, Councilmember Brown, on this issue. I know nobody believes this. What about a strategy? A strategy which I've written, which was printed in the Post, and which I have articulated before. Do with the statehood vote what was done with the Martin Luther King birthday. Every year, John Conyers, obviously the Democrats for 40 years controlled the House, so he was able to do this, had a test vote for all practical purposes. And every year, the vote to make Martin Luther King's birthday a national holiday got more and more votes. It was finally signed into law by Ronald Reagan. Eleanor Holmes Norton has, that's her province. I realize the Republicans control the House. But in the Senate, what about a strategy of introducing it every year, getting a vote every year, and building on that, rather than you traveling around the country without a vehicle to say what you want to have happen? Are you in agreement with that strategy?
I am in agreement with any strategy that helps us get closer to statehood. As you know, when we first launched this a couple months ago, I talked about a more aggressive, unapologetic approach
to
statehood.
I like that word, unapologetic.
And so whatever strategy is on the table, whether it means going to other states, whether it means walking around the Hill, whether it means getting regular residents more involved in this process, whether it means the strategy you just articulated, I don't want to take anything off the
table. Have you suggested this to Congresswoman Norton?
No, I certainly can. She and I talk about statehood all the
time. And what about Harry Reid, who the majority leader, who is a statehood, he's the only majority leader who actually uses the word.
And one of the things, Mark, what we have to do, I cannot stress enough about getting regular residents more involved in this process.
Why don't you think they are psychologically?
I don't know. I don't know if they understand the
benefits. Stockholm syndrome. We're in love with our captors.
I think it's more not understanding what the benefits of statehood are, what the benefits of our independence, and I think that's part of our message. It has to get out to regular residents. And one thing, my very able staff corrected me. I think I said URL address. It'll be the IP address that's blocked to certain destinations in the city, so you can't play in libraries,
that's for
government buildings,
internet
and schools.
Gaming.
Yes.
All right, let's go to your colleagues. You're obviously aware that there is an ethical cloud over the legislature that you serve in. One, Harry Thomas, has resigned and will be going to jail. Kwame Brown, the chairman of the city council, is alleged and is being investigated by the U.S. attorney. There is no indictment. He has not been charged. But if the same thing should happen, a criminal information which was offered on Harry Thomas should be for Kwame Brown, if that should happen, should he resign?
No, I'm going to I've always been extremely consistent on these kinds of issues. Just because it's something of information?
Criminal information. Showed in evidence says there will be charges then, and there will be a
charges,
plea.
Even if they're charges, even if they're allegations, I'm going to stay with what I've always said. I think we have to let the legal process play itself out. So, no, I will not be calling for his resignation.
So Harry Thomas shouldn't have resigned either?
No, once obviously things started playing out the way they did, and clearly there were going to be charges and there was going to be a plea, he did the right thing by resigning.
All right. Now, what about the mayor? What's your feeling about the mayor? Will he be exonerated? And if the same thing should happen, what applies to him? And how do you just cope with all this, which affects something that you want and I want and many people want, is more power for the district, and it's used as a rationale for not giving us power?
No, it's difficult in the environment we're in. But keep in mind, allegations and charges doesn't make them true. That's why there's a legal process. And I have yet to see anything or hear anything that the mayor is culpable in anything. Clearly, we're in a tough political environment. Congressional approval ratings are in the single digits. Legislative bodies around the country are under different kind of pressures. People are mad, and they're mad, and they take it out on the elected officials, as they should. But our city is moving in the right directions. People are running into the city to live here. Businesses want to be here. We're trying to make it a more business-friendly city, a more family-friendly city. We're trying to move our schools forward, trying to keep our streets safe. As you know, I'm working on jobs all the time, trying to get our D.C. residents hired as much as possible. We're going to continue to do that. We're trying to give our businesses incentives so if they hire D.C. residents, they get tax breaks. So our city is moving in the right direction, even with some of the challenges.
Let me
go
to another subject, campaign finance. Brian Weaver, who ran for Ward 1 City Council, is going to have an initiative to ban corporate contributions. They're banned in federal campaigns, and LLCs, limited liability corporate companies, which are nothing more than a dodge and to evade. Where do you stand on corporate contributions continuing to be legal in the District of Columbia?
Well, I am for it. I have no problem with corporate contributions.
You have no problem. Why?
Because from my standpoint, it's the law. And if the law changes, if experts come in, if there's some hearings on this, as you know, we're going to go through some campaign finance conversations, whether we need different legislation, if some experts come in.
When this initiative appears on the ballot, banning corporate contributions, you'll vote against it.
I want to hear from experts first.
Why do you have to hear from experts?
Because I understand there was a Supreme Court decision that talked about corporate contributions were legal. And I want to further that and see why they would not be here in the District of Columbia.
What about limited liability companies, which are nothing more than, to explain this, somebody's having a company, setting up 8 or 9 subsidiaries, calling them different names so that you can get $500 in a contribution. It's just a dodge. It's a way of evading campaign limitations.
And that's a definite conversation I'm more open-minded to about how we deal with LLCs.
What do you mean, how you deal
on how with we, how we have to curb that or close that loophole?
Why? How would you curb it? Why not just close it?
Or ban it? Again, I want to continue to hear from experts and see why it's a problem for some folks and where the opposition is coming from.
So when you ran, and you're running now, you've received corporate contributions.
Absolutely.
And LLC contributions.
Yes, I have.
And you won't stop. You'll continue to do that.
The law is, as long as we're doing everything within the bounds of the law.
All right. You've done so well, we're going to keep you over for a short period of time and
lucky me.
get some calls from the listeners.
If you are on the line right now, please hold on. We'll come back from traffic and weather and get to your phone calls at 877-336-1035. You're listening to the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin. Our guest in the studio, at-large D.C. Councilman Michael Brown. We'll be taking your phone calls next at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035.
Well, let's go to some calls.
Right now, holding on from Fairfax, Jeff is calling in. Jeff, go ahead. You're on the Politics Program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question was, I'm a 20-year-old Democrat in Fairfax County, and I'm not really represented here. And I love the city. I grew up here, and I've wanted to move in a district, but I'm not about to move into a district where I'm not represented on the federal level. I was wondering, are there numbers for how many people like me, how many residents, jobs, and businesses stay out of the district for that reason?
I like that question, and frankly, after we talk about your question and answer it, I would love for you to send a letter to whoever your state representative is and see if they'll introduce a resolution in the Virginia State House talking about why statehood is important. And I think you raised some important questions, and those are some of the issues of why we're fighting so hard for statehood. We think those are some of the benefits that maybe corporations and companies would come in if we were a state. Maybe more residents would come in if we were a state. Maybe you would move in if we were a state. But I would love for you to take a proactive role and write your state senator, your state representative, and see if they would consider introducing a resolution. We're already working with some folks in your state houses in Virginia. So thank you very much for your question, and thank you for raising that. That's exactly why we're fighting this battle.
We're going to take another call, but just a little bit of history lesson. In November of 1993, and I was there, there was a vote on statehood. There were 152 votes for statehood. Eleanor Holmes Norton was just euphoric that 60% of the House members, Democrats were in majority, voted for it. What kind of low bar is that? 60%, 100% should have voted for it, who were Democrats. In the Senate, just for instruction, it never got out of committee. Senator Sasser, who lives here in the District of Columbia, did an Alphonse and Gaston Act with Senator John Glenn. They had an informational hearing. The Democrats were in the majority, and it never even got reported out of committee. All right, let's go to another call.
Back to the phones. Bernard is calling in from Hyattsville. Bernard, go ahead. You're on the Politics Program.
Yes, I'm pretty new to the area. I'm trying to understand this issue of statehood for D.C. How is D.C.'s plight different from any other territory of the U.S., for instance, Guam or Puerto Rico?
We pay taxes. We pay federal taxes, and they don't. I thought you were going to say, and don't you agree with me, Michael? You don't have to agree with me. Ted Kennedy said it best. The reason we don't have the rights that all other Americans have is we suffer from the four twos. We're too liberal, we're too urban, we're too democratic, and we're too black.
Hear, hear.
another call?
Back to the phones. Line four, I believe, Dauda, is that the correct pronunciation of your name?
I'm late.
Sir, are you with us?
Yes, I'm there, yes.
Okay, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, what I want to ask Mr. Prokin and Mr. Brown is, I mean, I want D.C. to be independent. But if they were to be independent, where would the capital of the United States be?
Well, I think that's a good question. We've had some hearings, as you may or may not know. D.C. statehood falls under my committee purview that I oversee, and we've had many hearings related to that.
Why isn't your committee called the Statehood Committee? Michael Brown, I've asked you this before. You allowed that to be diminished. The mayor has gotten arrested. Don't you think the name of the committee—
I got arrested, too, by the way.
All right. Why don't you think the name of the committee should be the Statehood Committee?
And I will talk to Chairman Brown about that.
All right. I have a question about rats. We did a story having to do with, we aired a story having to do with Mary Chase bill. Attorney General Cuccinelli interpreted the bill for saying that there will be rats that will migrate to Virginia by virtue of the fact that this is a lenient pro-rat bill. What's your comment on this entire controversy?
No, I understand what Councilmember Che was trying to do, and frankly,
what was she trying to do?
Supporters trying to figure out how we, as you know, we have a rat problem here in our city, and it's not in just certain parts of the city. It's all over the city. It's from Ward 1 through Ward 8, and trying to figure out what to do with the rats. As you know, there's some folks that think that they should not be slaughtered, that they should be put out in some natural habitat in the woods somewhere.
What do you feel?
I really don't care. I just want to help our residents get the rats out of their alleys and their neighborhoods and in their homes. And so from my standpoint,
are you
really
in favor of the Che legislation?
Yes, I am.
Do you think it's too lenient toward too pro-rat?
Well, I don't know about pro-rat. The point is to get rats out of our city. And so I support her in the measure.
And what do you think of Attorney General Cuccinelli's remarks?
I totally understand what he's saying from his standpoint. He doesn't want D.C. rats in his jurisdiction. So I understand what he's referring to.
So what's the solution?
Well, I'm going to continue to support Councilmember Che and her effort, and we're going to figure it out. But one thing we do have to do, just like anything else, there are never any silver bullets to any of our problems. We have to figure out many different strategies, but we do have a rat problem in our city. People don't take care of their trash like they should. They don't dispose of it like they should. And so we have to do a better job of getting rid of these rats.
But the Che legislation is in no way flawed.
Well, I think every piece of legislation is always flawed at the beginning. That's why we have we go through a legislative process to figure out how to fix it and how to make it better, and that's what we're doing now.
So do you want to fix it? Do you want to amend that legislation?
I don't know. I think that's what there'll be some amendments, I'm sure, that'll come up, and I'll let you know how I'll vote when the amendment comes up.
All right. Any other questions?
We're back to the phones. Peter is calling in from Southeast. Peter, go ahead. You're on the politics program.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a native of Washington, D.C., and I'm a business owner. Primarily in Southeast area. And I was wondering if the councilman is aware of any problems that are going on with regard to regulatory permits, et cetera. I have a business that wants to move into a location in Southeast. Began to file my applications about July and have yet to get a full occupancy permit because of all the regulatory red tape that's going on with regard to the DCRA. It seems that every time you go in there, everybody's having a great party, but there's very little that's being done.
All right, we're going to have Councilmember Brown react to this after a short pause.
Friday morning means the politics program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin, and Mark is now taking your questions. Any topic of politics is wide open on the phones right now at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can also pose a question on WTOP's Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag politics program. All right, Mark, do you want to pick up with D.C. statehood, or should we go straight to the South Carolina primary?
Well, let's go to the South Carolina primary. I was down there. It seems to me that Newt Gingrich very well could win that primary. You know what my scenario is, Mark Lewis. I want a brokered convention. I want a convention.
You never give up on this.
No. 1952 was the last time they went more than one ballot in both Eisenhower for the Republican, Stevenson for the Democrat. In 76, Gerald Ford was contested by Ronald Reagan, went to the end of the first ballot. In 1980, Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter, went to the end of the first ballot. But wouldn't it be wonderful in this deliberative process? I'm really wishing for 1924, where there were 102 ballots, and they recessed for 2 weeks in New York City.
I wasn't here then.
You know, nor was I. Or even in Philadelphia, where there was a walkout in 1948, where you remember Strom Thurmond walked out because Hubert Humphrey made the speech on civil rights and formed a separate party. And to the left, Henry Wallace walked out and formed a separate party. There were four political conventions in one city, in Philadelphia, in 1948. But I think it is the grandest form of democracy. Rather, the Democrats have already cut back to 3 days. It's going to be a coronation for Barack Obama. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I wish somebody in D.C. would have run against him in the D.C. primary as a protest for the way he's treated this city. But having said that, going back to the Republicans, if Gingrich wins or even comes close in South Carolina, we go on to Florida. And the best thing would be if somebody jumps in who has, you know, the line about Gingrich. He's got more baggage than the airlines, which I think is just terrific.
But what is the likelihood at this stage of the game, if South Carolina is indeed a game changer, Gingrich is surging, suppose he wins? Does that change the situation for Florida, and does that provide an opening for someone else to get in? Or do people start to then look at this as a two-man race and perhaps jump more to Newt's campaign?
Yes, I think they probably view it as a two-person race. Ron Paul is going to show up at the convention. They're going to have to contend with him. He's going to bring delegates. He has a fervent, dedicated constituency, and he likes being an irritant. But I think that some other candidate, Mitch Daniels, Jeb Bush, I like some suggestions from the public, will say, wait a second, all these candidates are too flawed. And I'm going to jump in. I'll remind people, I'm glad Jim Farley's not here because he'd say Plotkin stopped giving history lessons. But in 1976, in a former life, I worked for Mo Udall. And Jerry Brown, the youngest governor and the oldest governor now of California, jumped in and won 8 or 9 primaries at the end. So I don't think it's out of the woodwork. You need 1,144 delegates to be the nominee of the Republican Party, that somebody looks at the situation and says, all our candidates are terminally flawed. I'm going to jump in and see what I can do.
At this stage of the game, after watching last night's primary, do you agree with some?
It wasn't primary, it was a debate.
Last night's debate, excuse me. Do you agree with some who feel that Mitt Romney is starting to stumble across the finish line?
Yeah, I used this line. It was so good, I'll repeat it in favor of Margaret Thatcher. He's gone wobbly. His answer yesterday, last night, about the tax returns from previous years, where John King pointed out that his father, George Romney, released returns in the 60s of 12 years preceding, mm-hmm. and he said, maybe? You don't say maybe. Maybe is an insulting term. I think he's vulnerable. I think he's definitely vulnerable, but he has a campaign apparatus, and he has a lot of money in the bank.
None of the questions that he seemed to struggle with last night are questions that he hadn't heard before. Healthcare, Romney care, as they called it, his views on abortion or his flip-flop on abortion, his tax return issue. He seemed to struggle with all of those questions he should have known were coming.
Yeah, he was usually error-free. His problem is not so much his ideology and philosophy, is that people just, he doesn't connect. Even with the Republican establishment, there really is not the enthusiasm or an intensity level. All his rationale for his candidacy is, I can defeat Barack Obama. It's not affirmative. It's just, I'm more electable. But there's no passion or intensity from his followers.
All right, we're going to come back and get your views on how Newt Gingrich handled the extramarital affair question last night at the very front of the debate, and how that may or may not help him in South Carolina.
And also Bob McDonald's endorsement.
Indeed. We'll also talk about that and get to your phone calls, because there's a number of people who want to talk about D.C. statehood with you as well. 877-336-1035. Friday morning means the politics program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin. We're doing an open forum session right now until 11 o'clock, with Mark Plotkin taking your phone calls and discussing all things politics right now. the South Carolina primary, D.C. statehood, and a number of issues. Call us at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Questions posed as well on WTOP's Facebook page and via Twitter. Use the hashtag Politics Program. We've got just a few minutes left in the broadcast, so if you have a question for Mark, call us now at 877-336-1035. Let's talk about the news of the morning involving Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, his endorsement of Mitt Romney. He'll be campaigning for Romney today in South Carolina. He's already been on national TV. What's the impact of this endorsement?
Well, you know, I think you should pick a vice president if you're the presidential candidate, nominee, and if Romney should be the nominee, who can carry a state you can't carry. I tell the story about, it's really amazing, in 2000, Al Gore should have picked Bob Graham, who had been elected to the State House, the State Senate, the governor two times, and United States Senate, and he didn't pick Bob Graham, and if he had picked Bob Graham, he would have won Florida. We wouldn't have had that vote recount. And the reason he didn't, Mark, pick Bob Graham, Al Gore said, can you believe this, that he was too boring. Talking about... All right,
coming from Al Gore.
Yes, exactly. Now, I think you can make a case that McDonald, by virtue of being on the ticket with Romney, could help him in a state that is definitely a toss-up state. Mm-hmm. For the first time since 1964, it went Democratic. He's a popular governor. He has a high approval rating. He's conservative, but he's describes himself as a happy conservative. And I think McDonald made a shrewd move. So if Romney is the nominee, Romney, in an act of gratitude, very well might pick him.
All right, let's talk about the debate from last night. It opened with the question that we all knew was coming during the debate. I'm not certain that we thought it would be the very first question, and I'm not sure it mattered because there had been so many developments during the day. John King did a summary of all of them and then posed the question to Newt Gingrich about his ex-wife's allegations.
Good for John King. I mean, I'm glad he asked it as the first question. It was the news of the day. Mm-hmm. And for him not to ask him, his responsibility as a journalist is to ask questions, not to pander to the crowd, not to pander to the candidate. That's what was on people's minds. And he asked it. And of course, Newt Gingrich was prepared. I'm sure he had scripted and rehearsed his response. He's a rhetorical performer. He's very good at batting, and he knew that the audience would be on his side against the media. Was a legitimate question, and Gingrich could answer. It's up to the voters to make a determination how it factors into their decision.
Let's listen to a piece of how Newt responded to the question last night.
To take an ex-wife and make it 2 days before the primary, a significant question in a presidential campaign, is as close to despicable as anything I can imagine. The story is false. Every personal friend I have who knew us in that period says the story was false. We offered several of them to ABC to prove it was false. They weren't interested because they would like to attack any Republican. They're attacking the governor. They're attacking me. I'm sure they'll presently get around to the Senator Santorum and Congressman Paul. I am tired of the elite media protecting Barack Obama by attacking Republicans.
Did he defuse this at least temporarily, and does it have legs beyond South Carolina?
No, I don't think he defused it. He defused it for the night, and the remark about elite media and protecting Barack Obama played, that was red meat to the crowd that was sitting there. But the voters will have to make their own determination, and that's why I think somebody very well might size up all the candidates. You know, Rick Santorum talks about his electability and the states that he could carry as president. The last time he ran in one of these swing states, Pennsylvania, he lost by 18 points. I asked him in New Hampshire about that in the spin room. I said, was just that a bad year? He says, that was a bad year. Well, come on now. So I think all these candidates, Republican candidates, are seriously flawed, and somebody very well might say, look, I don't have the baggage that they do.
Let's go to the phones. Sean is holding on from Fairfax. Sean, go ahead. You're on the Politics Program.
Hey, Mark. By the way, that was just perfect the way you said it when all Republicans were flawed at that moment. That was actually kind of funny. But my question was, I actually think that Newt Gingrich actually shot himself in the foot, because I just remember from Kane that, you know, when you have these sexual harassment issues, it really just impacted your presidential campaign. And I think it's going to be between Romney and Paul. And I want to know, what do you think Paul has to do to actually beat Romney?
The Republican Party will not allow themselves to nominate Ron Paul. They consider him a libertarian, not a Republican. They consider him somebody off the reservation on foreign policy, and they just won't permit it. They won't allow it. But unlike 4 years ago, where he conducted his own rump convention outside, they wouldn't let him speak. They're going to have to give him some sort of honorific position at the convention to appease his supporters.
Time for one more question. Mike from Waldorf has a suggestion on how to build support for D.C. statehood. Mike, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was just wondering, shouldn't D.C. run a campaign like politicians do and go to other states, run TV ads, radio ads, you know, and get a write-in to their congressmen, hey, let's make D.C. a state.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Michael Brown's strategy. That is assuming that congressmen and senators listen to their own elected officials, but I think they're more responsive if they listen to their own constituents. It does lack a national constituency. I just don't want them to be so distracted that they're traveling around the country and not concentrating on people right here who vote.
You think you have to get some kind of movement. If you can't get the locals to buy in, maybe the rest of America would see what you're seeing.
Yeah, the rest of America is not knowledgeable.
And I shouldn't say get
status.
The locals to buy in. Maybe get them more actively involved as an advocate.
Yeah, they've conditioned themselves to this unequal status, and they've got to get mad. And then when you have a president who should be a champion for this and doesn't speak to it, that's why I wanted somebody to run in a primary against him to lodge a protest.
And that'll be the final word on this week's politics program.